ॐ नमो ब्रह्मादिभ्यो ब्रह्मविद्यासम्प्रदायकर्तृभ्यो वंशर्षिभ्यो महद्भ्यो नमो गुरुभ्यः नारायणं पद्मभुवं वसिष्ठं शक्तिं च तत्पुत्रपराशरं च व्यासं च क्षौरपरं महान्तम् गोविंदयोगींद्रमथस्य शिष्यं श्रीशंकराचार्यमथस्य पद्मभारं च हस्तामलकं च शिष्यं तं धोतकं वार्तिककारमन्यान् अस्मद्गुरुन् सन्ततमानतोऽस्मि नमः श्रीशंकरानन्द गुरुपारम्भुजन्मने सविलासमहामोह ग्राहक्रासैककर्मणे ॐ गुड वेलकम बैक वी कम टू द फाइनल सेक्शन ऑफ आवर टेक्स्ट आई विल इंट्रोड्यूस इट विद दिस with this next verse. The structure of the whole chapter 7, Tripti Deepa Prakarana, the Prakarana, the chapter, titled Tripti Deepa, Deepa, a light that which reveals Tripti, the name of our chapter, Tripti, contentment, fulfillment. We're going to see that word quite extensively in the final part. The structure has been really twofold. One part of the structure has been going through that verse, Atmanam Chet Vijaniyat, that verse from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. But there's another structure, that is to say that this whole chapter is a commentary on that verse from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad that was quoted in the very first verse of this chapter. But there's another structure inherent in this chapter. We haven't seen it for a long time. The structure is way back in the 28th verse, which I'm sure is long forgotten, but we're going to see a reference to that as we begin today, so that both structures will be important. We'll see that as we continue. Kimit chan hiti va kyoktaha, kimit chan hiti va Shoka moksha udiritaha, shoka moksha udir, abhasasya hyavasthaisha, abhasasya hyavasthaisha, shashti triptis tu saptami, shashti triptis tu saptami. Kimichan iti, that's the second half of the verse, right? Kimichan kasyaka maya shariram anusanjvaret. If you've forgotten it, you can look at verse 1 in your handout. That's the verse from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad that this whole chapter is commenting on. And that last verse began with the statement, kichan, kimichan, desiring what? Kasyaka maya, and for whose sake? Shariram anusanjvaret. Why do you bother torturing your body thus in the search of worldly pleasures? So, referring then to the final half of the verse, kimichan iti refers to the final part of the verse, the final half. Vakya uktaha, that which was said, uktaha, that which was said by the final half of this verse, vakya, that is, shoka mokshaha udiritaha. Udiritaha, it expresses, it explains what? Shoka moksha. Shoka moksha is a term that we heard, as I said before, way back in the 28th verse. And that's the second structure that underlies this whole chapter. The main structure is a commentary on that first verse. There was a second structure we saw way back there, which was this analysis of the process from ignorance to enlightenment in seven stages. Do you remember those seven stages? In fact, what he's going to say, look at the last part. He says, Ashoka Mokshaha is Shashti, is the sixth of those seven stages. Well, I'll remind you what they are in just a moment. Shoka Mokshaha is the Shashti, is the sixth of the seven stages. Triptihi tu Saptami. Tripti, the final topic of our chapter, contentment, is the Saptami, the seventh. Okay, what are these seven? Just to remind you, the first one was Ajnana. You're probably in your notes, but I'll write it up here anyway. Ajnana, ignorance. The second, I don't think I need to write the translations for you. You know these terms. Ajnana, ignorance. The second was Avarana, covering. The third was Vikshepa, projection. The fourth was Parokshajnanam, indirect knowledge. Remember these topics? The fifth was Aparokshajnanam, direct knowledge. The sixth was Shoka Moksha. Or we may have used the term Shoka Nivritti, means the same thing, cessation. Nivritti means cessation, moksha means freedom. Shoka moksha, freedom from shoka. Shoka means sadness, sorrow, suffering. Freedom from suffering, the cessation. Shoka Nivritti, the cessation of suffering. These were the sixth stage, and the seventh was Tripti. Tripti, contentment, fulfillment. So we saw these seven stages are enumerated in verse 26. They're discussed in the verses immediately after 26. And we didn't come to the end of the list of seven. In fact, we're just now finishing our discussion of number six, the shoka nivritti, cessation of shoka. Do you remember the context was when we were discussing the tenth man story? So all seven of these stages, these are the stages going from complete ignorance to complete enlightenment, these seven stages were described with reference to the tenth man story, just to make that connection so we can regain that whole topic in our minds. The first stage, Ajnana, is the tenth man doesn't know. Is the tenth man is utterly ignorant. Then comes number two, Avarana. Why is he ignorant? His nature as the tenth man is covered. Avarana means covered. So he fails to recognize himself. Then comes stage three, Vikshepa, is the projection. What is a projection? The tenth man is drowned, is a projection, which leads to the suffering. Then, remember, they're all crying and weeping, thinking that their buddy is lost. Along comes a passerby and says, hey, the tenth man is not lost. Really? Yes, he's not lost. He's here now. This is paroksha jnana. Why is it paroksha? The tenth man doesn't know it was he himself that he forgot to count. So first comes the paroksha jnana, the indirect knowledge. The one you're looking for is not dead. Then comes the aparoksha jnana. The one you're looking for is you. You are the one you're looking for. Tat tvamasi. We had long discussion on paroksha and aparoksha jnana, leading to what we've been discussing for the last several classes. And that is shoka moksha or shoka nivritti, the absence, the cessation of sorrow and suffering. That's expressed really in the second half of the verse. Kimichan, desiring, the very last quarter of the verse is shariram anusanjvaret. Why would you undergo any kind of suffering if you know your true self? How does the verse begin? Atmanam chet vijaniya, chet if. If you know your true self, first line. Fourth line, why would you suffer? If you know your true self, why would you suffer? First and last, verse, lines of that verse. So the second half of the verse from the Brihadaranyaka, which we've been discussing for quite a few classes now, is really focused on item number six, which is the penultimate step. It is the Shashti, sixth of the seventh. Triptihi tu saptami. Tu, on the other hand, there is a saptami, a seventh step. And what is that? Triptihi. Tripti, fulfillment, contentment. So now begins our discussion of tripti. Remember, that's the title of the chapter. And it is the culmination not only of the chapter, it's a culmination of a life of spiritual growth, contentment. We'll talk quite a bit about the significance of the word. Two things to be pointed out. One is in the final words of the verse, which we've skipped over. Abhasasya hi avastha esha. I'm breaking the words for you. Esha, this. This what? Avastha, this state. Which state? Saptami avastha. This seventh state. This seventh state, esha saptami avastha, he indeed is abhasasya. We've used that word abhasa a whole lot in this chapter. Remember what it describes, reflected consciousness. Reflected consciousness means what? You and everything concerning your experience, the experiential you. The experiential you, along with all your experience, is chidabhasa. So what he's saying in this third line is really very astute and very important. He says that esha avastha, this state, this condition of tripti, is abhasasya for chidabhasa, for reflected consciousness. And the significance of that doesn't make sense until we compare it with what it's not for. What is tripti, contentment, fulfillment, what is it not for? It is not for atma. Remember? This is the point he wants to point. This is what he wants to say here. And that is, triptihi, the seventh and culminating of these seven stages, is not for atma. It is for the individual person, especially for the mind. In fact, we can make that statement about all seven of these stages. Not only the saptami avastha can we just make it simple? Abhasasya? We just say for the mind of the individual person. A little loose interpretation, but it'll ease our discussion right now. So all seven of these stages are not stages for atma. These are stages of the mind of the spiritual seeker. So notice, going back to the 10th man story, the 10th man was always standing there. So it wasn't the 10th man that went through these stages, but rather his mind then went through these stages. In the same way, your true self, Atma, Satchidananda Atma, that unchanging consciousness by which you know what's happening right now, that consciousness has always been full and complete, has always been tripta. Tripta is the adjective form. It has always been contented. Atma has always been content. Atma has always been full, complete. Then what is all this Vedanta for? To address the problem of suffering. Where does the problem of suffering lie? You can all answer that by now, in our minds. And that's what all seven of these steps are about, is addressing the problem of suffering, whose locus is our minds. Those seven stages in our mind begin with ajnana, ignorance. Atma is not ignorant. Ignorance belongs to your mind. Avarana, that covering, It is the covering in the mind that prevents you from recognizing the true nature of Atma, even though Atma is immediately present here and now in this ordinary experience. The true nature of Atma may not be recognized because of avarana, covering. Where is that covering? In your mind. And when you don't recognize your true nature as being full and complete, what do you experience? Desires. I want this, I want that, etc., etc. This is vikshepa. You project a self other than who you truly are. You are truly full and complete, but what do you imagine yourself to be? Limited and finite, and struggling for a few moments of happiness in this life. That is vikshepa, that is a projection. That projection also takes place in your mind. Then along comes Vedanta. Vedanta says you're not a limited, finite individual, you're full and complete. You say, really? Paroksha jnana. Then, with the help of a lot of Vedanta, you finally get it. Not that Vedanta says I am full and complete, but I know my true nature to be full and complete. Aparoksha jnanam. Both of these take place in the mind, right? Paroksha jnanam takes place in the mind. Aparoksha jnanam takes place in the mind. Then finally, that shoka, that sadness, that suffering goes away. Where was that sadness? In the mind. And in the absence of sadness, how do you feel? You feel tripti. Where is that feeling? In the mind. You get it. Which means Vedanta is utterly useless for Atma. Absolutely, utterly useless. But it's not Atma who decided to come to class tonight. An individual person who suffers, who's subject to suffering, decided to come to class tonight. That one is Chirabhasa. All seven of these stages belong to Chirabhasa. Loosely put, the mind, your mind. The mind along with the owner of the mind. Okay, so we've completed the verse. One more point I'd like to make here. We've come to the end of the verse and we're done with item 6. Which means item 7 isn't in the verse. Well, I mean, it's just one verse. How much can you put in one verse? Vedanta stresses again and again this tripti, this fulfillment, this contentment. The word that's so often used is ananda. Atma is sat chit ananda. Of course, we know that word ananda is often misunderstood. We've discussed before how the ananda we're talking about is not a specific experience. It's not the experience of bliss. It is your true nature. And in fact, just to make it clear that the ananda, by the way, the word triptihi and ananda are equivalent words. So this tripti is found in the mind. But this tripti, when it's expressed as ananda, is not like any other kind of ananda. We have all kinds of ananda. So if you go for a walk on a nice day, you have nice day ananda. I had a nice walk this afternoon. Nice day ananda. If you enjoy the company of your friends, you have friend ananda. An example Pooja Swamiji used to give, because he liked coffee, is you have coffee ananda. So these are all different kinds of ananda. But this ananda, the ananda expressed by the word tripti, is utterly different. When the word ananda is used in commentaries, it's often accompanied by two very important adjectives. The adjectives are nitya and niratishaya. So you see it as a compound word, nitya niratishaya nandaha. It'll come in the texts. Nitya means permanent, unchanging, literally eternal. And niratishaya means unexcelled. Nitya, permanent, and niratishaya, unexcelled. Now, what are the significance of these two adjectives? Nitya ananda means an ananda that doesn't come and go. The ananda when I took my walk came and went. The ananda of being with your friends comes and goes. Coffee ananda comes and goes. This is nitya ananda. First of all, it's an ananda that doesn't come and go. Please note that all experiences come and go without exception. So then by definition, the ananda we're speaking about is not a particular experience. Secondly, niratishaya. We'll actually see that in the... Let's see. Niratishaya, I'm going to set that aside. The whole next verse is about niratishaya, unexcelled. So we'll just hold that word aside for the time being. So this ananda we're talking about is not... In fact, I should have saved this... We'll come back to this in the next verse. Because this discussion belongs with the next verse. We'll set it aside for the moment. We'll come back to it with the next verse. But the last point I want to make is only getting to stage six, as this verse does. Vedanta goes on to talk about ananda, to talk about tripti. Maybe this particular verse doesn't. But the teachings of Vedanta do a great deal. Now, why am I making this particular point? When you step outside the teachings of Vedanta, in particular, if you were to examine the teachings of yoga as taught by the great Rishi Patanjali in the Yoga Sutras, our main text on meditation, so yoga and its closely allied philosophical teaching called Sankhya, Sankhya and yoga are also a means for moksha. Just as Vedanta gives you a roadmap, if I can use that expression. Vedanta is a roadmap for moksha. You can say yoga and Sankhya is also a roadmap for moksha. But these roadmaps look different and actually arrive at different places. Uh-oh. We thought that they arrive at the same moksha. The definition of moksha in the Vedantic tradition and the definition of Vedanta as followed by the yoga tradition and the Sankhya tradition, the definitions are different. And this is a point I want to bring out here before we proceed. In the traditions of yoga and Sankhya, the roadmap stops at step six, shoka nivritti. And in yoga, that's so absolutely clear because when your mind, the goal of yoga is not merely to make your mind perfectly silent, but to remove all the samskaras that cause further thoughts to arise. So you arrive at a condition when it is impossible for the mind to have any activity whatsoever. And why is that desirable? Any activity causes suffering. And there's a big argument for this, and I don't think we'll get into all the details of it right now. Not necessary. But, you know, the argument goes like this. Even when your mind is active and your mind is engaged in a pleasant activity, even in that pleasant activity, there's some suffering. Even in a pleasant activity, there's some suffering. Why? First of all, the pleasant activity is finite. It's limited. It's not a limitless pleasant experience. It's a limited pleasant experience. Secondly, you know it's not going to last long. And you may even be thinking, oh no, it's going to go away. So the point is, and this is a very typical yogic teaching. We don't say this so much in Vedanta, but I'm making a contrast between the two schools of thought. The teachings of yoga point out that even a pleasant experience is involved with suffering, which means even to try to cultivate only pleasant experiences in your mind is not going to remove suffering. If you want to completely remove suffering, what should you do? Utterly remove all mental activities. That is the goal of the school of yoga. And they call that moksha. The commentators use the word moksha. The sutrakara, the one who wrote the scripture, calls it kaivalya, but it ends up meaning the same as moksha. And how do they define moksha? Number six, shoka nivritti. When your mind is utterly free from activity, there is zero experience of any suffering. Moksha. That's not Vedanta at all. How different it is from Vedanta. When I hadn't studied properly, I remember studying Yoga Sutras, but not in the depth I needed to. And I thought, well, it looks like sort of yoga is sort of compatible with Vedanta. Then I went and studied it really, really deeply. And with this really thorough study, no way. The teachings of yoga and the teachings of Vedanta are worlds apart, a huge gulf. And this is one expression of that huge gulf. The culmination of yoga is the cessation of mental activities resulting in complete freedom from suffering. Stage six. What does Vedanta say? We're not done. At level six, there's one more. Tripti, fulfillment, contentment, and that's the topic for the remainder of the chapter, and that's the title of the chapter as well. Okay, now we proceed. Sankusha vishaya striptir, sankusha vishaya striptir, yam triptir nirankusha, yam triptir kritam krityam prapaniyam, kritam krityam praptam hityeva tripyati, praptam. Excuse me. Sankusha triptihi vishayaihi. Triptihi, the kind of tripti that you have vishayaihi, due to vishaya, due to worldly experience. Vishayaihi triptihi, the kind of contentment you get due to fulfilling desires, due to worldly activities. It is sankusha, sa-ankusha, limited. The kind of satisfaction, tripti you can translate as satisfaction, contentment, those would be the main definitions, satisfaction or contentment. That contentment that you get, vishayaihi, through worldly experiences, through fulfilling desires, is sankusha, it is limited. On the other hand, iyam triptihi, iyam, this one, this what? Iyam triptihi, this tripti. Which tripti? Number seven, the tripti which is the culmination of this life of spiritual growth, iyam triptihi nirankusha, without limitation. The tripti, the contentment you gain through worldly experiences is limited. The tripti you gain through this process of spiritual growth, by gaining this knowledge of your true nature, is nirankusha. Why? The commentator explains, I'll spare you his exact words, but he says that when you gain contentment, fulfilling a desire, suppose you want a cup of coffee. It's a desire. And you have a cup of coffee. Good. Coffee Ananda. Enjoy it. Then you're done drinking the cup of coffee. So you have tripti. You had a desire. You drink your coffee. And that desire is gone. The absence of a desire is called contentment, satisfaction, tripti. Good. So then why don't you just drink more coffee? Nothing. You can. The problem is that after satisfying the coffee desire, another desire soon arises. So in worldly life, we satisfy individual desires, And those individual desires are endless. We've discussed this at great length. We won't go into it further today. One desire after another desire after another desire. You want the coffee, then you want this, and you want that. There's everything. So when will you fulfill every last desire? You won't. They keep coming more and more. The metaphor that's given in the Bhagavad Gita and other scriptures, it's like putting fuel into a fire. When will the fire be satisfied? When will the fire have enough wood? The word, there are several words for fire in Sanskrit, one of which is analam. Analam literally means that which is never satisfied. That's the name for fire. No matter how much wood you put into that fire, the fire wants more, 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 more. This describes our desires. You fulfill the coffee desire and another desire comes. So in this way, the trip, the contentment we gain, vishayaihi, due to fulfilling worldly desires, is sankusha. It is limited. On the other hand, iyam triptihi, this tripti that we gain through this process of spiritual growth, is nirankusha, unlimited. Why? It's a different, there's the American expression, it's a different kind of animal. What does it mean? It's comparing apples and oranges. They're utterly different. Notice the tripti that you gain from fulfilling a desire. Is it an experience or is it not an experience? The tripti you gain from fulfilling a desire is definitely an experience. The experience has a beginning. The experience has a middle. And most certainly, the experience comes to an end. We know this so well. This tripti, iyam triptihi, the tripti that we gain through this process of spiritual growth, is utterly unlike that. Why? First thing, and this is our discussion before, that worldly tripti is experiential. Notice how I gave that word nitya before, nitya ananda. So nitya, eternal, means unchanging, means that which didn't have a beginning, that which doesn't have an end. That doesn't describe any experience. That describes a reality. Ultimately, it describes the reality of who you are. The nature of Atma is ananda. The nature of Atma is tripta, content. And how do we've been discussing this from the very beginning of the chapter, but just to give you the very simple understanding, remember the 10th man was looking for himself, but he always was the one he was looking for. In the same way, most people are looking for contentment. Right? That's what it is. Just like the 10th man was looking for himself, in conventional life, people are looking for contentment. And remember, as long as that 10th man was running through the jungle looking for the missing one, he was never going to find the one he was looking for. In the same way, as long as you are engaged in worldly activities, trying to find contentment, guess what? It will forever elude you. It's like trying to reach the horizon. Good luck. The further you go, the further it recedes from you. In the same way, it is utterly impossible to gain contentment through these worldly means. What was the solution for the 10th man was to realize he already was what he was looking for. Right? He was what he was looking for. What are you looking for? Contentment. Suppose you are that contentment. Suppose your true nature is contentment. Suppose your true nature is sat chit underline ananda. That's an utterly different kind of tripti. That's a tripti which is not experiential. That's a tripti which is your true nature. And here, this is that second word, niratishaya, unexcelled. It refers to two different kinds of ananda. One kind of ananda is experiential. The other kind of ananda is, these English words are intimidating. I should have used Sanskrit words. Anyway, the other word here is existential. So to use Sanskrit words, experiential ananda is anubhava. Existential ananda means swarupa. Anubhava ananda, experiential ananda, is like apples. And swarupa ananda, ananda which is your true nature, is like oranges. They're utterly different. Like oranges, apples and oranges. I'm back to that metaphor. So, that which is experiential ananda is finite. That which is swarupa ananda is your true nature. And that's what this word niratishaya, unexcelled. Unexcelled because the best ananda is the best ananda. This is my, you've heard me give this example too many times. The best ananda is the ananda of deep sleep. Nothing like it. Blissful deep sleep. That points to Swarupa Ananda. It is unexcelled. No other experience is better than that contentment of deep sleep. That's what that second term Niratishya refers to. So this ananda, swarupa ananda, the ananda that's your true nature, existential ananda, is utterly different from experiential ananda. Experiential ananda is the first line, this vishayaihi triptihi, the contentment you gain through fulfilling worldly desires. But iam triptihi, this tripti we're talking about, number 7 on the chart, is swarupa ananda. It is your true nature. The 10th man discovers he is what he's been looking for. You discover that you're already content and you need do nothing further. This is the discovery. When you discover, to use slightly different language, we've used this before, to say that your true nature is the source of experiential contentment. Swarupa ananda is the source of experiential ananda. And what that means is, remember the ice cream example? When you eat ice cream and you become happy, is the happiness coming from the ice cream? Or when you drink coffee and have that coffee ananda, is the ananda in the coffee? So we had this discussion before, and we said these worldly experiences are merely nimittas. They're agents to allow that ananda, which is your true nature, to become manifest in your mind and your experience. So this ananda, when a tenth man discovers himself, his search comes to an end, right? That's it. When you discover your true nature, your search comes to an end. It's not accidental that in English we call a sadhaka, a spiritual aspirant. In English we often use the word seeker. It's a good term, very accurate term. Of course, really speaking, everyone is a seeker, but people seek in different places. Everyone is seeking the same thing, right? Everyone is seeking contentment, but they seek in different places. Some people will seek in a mall. Some people will seek an Atlantic City. Some people will seek in a liquor store. Some people will seek in an ashram. They're all seeking the same thing. They're all seekers. What is the difference? Those who seek in the mall, etc., will their seeking ever come to an end? Not as long as they're alive. On the other hand, those who seek through the teachings of Vedanta, there's the possibility of that seeking coming to an end. And that's what's described in the second half of this verse. So when the tenth man discovers himself, seeking comes to an end. When the sadhaka, the spiritual aspirant, discovers his or her true nature, their seeking comes to an end. In the absence of the seeking, kritam krityam. Beautiful expression that describes the condition of tripti, contentment. If we wanted to use other words for tripti, contentment, here's another expression. Kritam krityam. Krityam is that which is to be done. It's called a potential participle. That which you need to do. Do you have a to-do list? Your to-do list is krityam. Kritam means done. Means every item on your to-do list is checked off. Now, imagine, I've given this metaphor elsewhere, imagine having a to-do list for your entire life. How many pages would it be? It'd fill a large book. Imagine the to-do list for your entire life. Every item is checked off. Every last one. Every imaginable one. People talk of, what is the term, bucket list? Your bucket list times 1,000. Everything's checked off. Kritam krityam. Everything that is to be done is done. Why? Everything that is to be done for the sake of contentment. You've discovered that you're already content and you are nitya ananda, always content. Therefore, the search for contentment comes to an end. Kritam krityam. All that needs to be done is done. Further, prapaniyam praptam. Prapaniyam is what you want to achieve. Suppose in addition to your to-do list, your bucket list, in addition to that, suppose you also want to go to heaven after this is all done. You want to have a good time while you're on this planet. And then after you've fulfilled your bucket list, you're ready to die. And then you want to go to heaven and have some heavenly fun, whatever that means. And some people take that very seriously. Obviously, I don't, and I think some of you don't. But certainly, Shankara took it, Vidyaranya Swami took it very seriously, and many people do take it seriously, that whatever follows this life should also be good. It better be good. You want to have a good life, and whatever follows this life, you want that to be good. Therefore, you want to acquire swarga, heaven. Swarga prapti is the Sanskrit terminology, going to heaven, swarga prapti. So what Vidyaranya Swami says here is that as a result of this tripti, prapaniyam, what you want to obtain after death, is praptam, acquired. Not only your tripti has fulfilled you not only in this life, but that tripti has fulfilled you after this life as well. And you might say, how does that work? You haven't had the next life, so how can tripti fulfill you in a life which is yet to happen, the life that would follow this one? Most of you can answer that, and there is no life after this one. This tripti, as a, I can't say side effect, but this in a way a side effect. The side effect of enlightenment is you don't get born again. And when I say side effect, I'm not being facetious. It's the main purpose of enlightenment is here and now, to be free from suffering. A side effect of enlightenment is you become free from sanchita karma. And being free from sanchita karma, there's nothing that will drive your sukshma sharira to obtain another physical body. If your sukshma sharira doesn't obtain another physical body, your sukshma sharira becomes one. In the commentaries, they say you become one with Hiranyagarbha. You become one with Ishvara. You merge into Ishvara. That's better than heaven, right? Because even from a Vedantic standpoint, even heavenly pleasures are finite, limited. They're better than this, but they're finite and limited. And limited also time-wise, you live a life in heaven, and then you take another life. So therefore, prapaniyam praptam, whatever you would want to obtain, prapaniyam, whatever you would want to obtain following this life, is praptam. It is acquired. It is fulfilled. How is it fulfilled? By removing the possibility of any condition after this life. So this condition is absolutely full and complete. The body and mind go away. What remains is absolutely full and complete. Go back to that bucket metaphor. The sun is shining on the bucket. Remove the bucket and the water, and the sun goes on shining, absolutely unaffected. Excuse me. So he concludes, iti eva tripyati, iti, thus, eva, indeed. Tripyati, one is fulfilled in this manner. In what manner? In this twofold manner. Kritam krityam, your whole to-do list for this life is done. You have the feeling that there is nothing more to be gained or accomplished in this life. And prapaniyam praptam, anything following this life, you know that there's nothing further for you, nothing further to be achieved. You have a sense of utter and complete contentment with regard to this life and regard to anything that would follow. All right. Now, to introduce the next verse, we can raise a question. If an enlightened person is utterly content, why would they bother getting out of bed in the morning? For the sake of argument. If you're utterly content, just lay there. Kritam krityam. Everything is done. Why bother getting out of bed? Does an enlightened person get out of bed in the morning? I think so. Why? If you were to ask the enlightened person would say, why not? Why should I stay in bed? Let's see how Vidyaranya handles that question. He says, Nidra bhikshe snana shauche, Nidra bhikshe snana, ne chami nakaro micha, ne chami nakaro, drashtarish chet kalpayanti, drashtarish chet kalpayanti, kim me syadanya kalpanata, kim me syadanya kalpanata. Nidra, sleep, bhiksha, taking alms. Do enlightened people ever sleep? We think so. Do enlightened people go for alms? Yes. Do they perform snana? Do they bathe? Yes. Do they perform shaucha, other ways of being clean? Yes. So when we see enlightened people nidra and bhiksha, they sleep, they collect alms, snana and shaucha, they bathe and they do other things for the sake of cleanliness. The enlightened person says, na ichami, I don't want to do them. You think, well, he doesn't want to sleep, he doesn't want to bathe, then why is he doing it? Right? Na ichami, remember, the enlightened person is kritam krityam, is content, has done everything they need to do, so does an enlightened person need to bathe? Or go for bhiksha, alms, or sleep? The enlightened person doesn't need to do that, and that's what he says, na ichami, I don't have any desire to do them. But then we see them do it. We see them bathing. We see them sleeping, etc. So the enlightened person says, na ichami, I don't have any desire to do these things. Na karomi cha, nor do I do them. I don't desire to do these. I don't do them, in fact. Now he says, na karomi cha, and I don't do them. I don't sleep. I don't go for alms. I don't bathe. You see them. Sleeping, bathing, and going for alms. And this fellow says, but I'm not doing it. How shall we, is he lying, or is he self-deceived? Or does he have a different perspective based on his or her self-identification? The enlightened person is one who says, one who knows, I am Satchitananda Atma. I am unchanging consciousness. The enlightened person knows this. The enlightened person knows I am unchanging consciousness, utterly independent of this body and mind. Please tell me, does unchanging consciousness go and collect alms? Does unchanging consciousness sleep? Does unchanging consciousness bathe? Of course not. The enlightened person knows I am unchanging consciousness, and as unchanging consciousness, I don't sleep, I don't go for alms, I don't bathe. He's not lying. The enlightened person is telling us their perspective identified as being unchanging consciousness. Our perspective on the outside is different. In fact, when you look at the enlightened person, are you looking at Satchitananda Atma or are you looking at a body? You only see the body. So isn't it true? It's the body engaged in sleep. It's the body engaged in collecting alms and bathing, etc. So there's no conflict between these two perspectives. What the enlightened person perceives is, I am unchanging consciousness. I don't do anything at all. From an outside perspective, you see the enlightened person engaged in various activities, and he says, drashtaraha chet kalpayanti. Drashtaraha are observers. He says, chet, if drashtaraha, observers, kalpayanti, if they imagine that I am doing these activities, if observers think that I am bathing, that I am sleeping, that I am collecting alms, if they think that I am engaged in these activities, he says, kim me syat, what is it to me? How does it affect me? How does what affect me? Anya kalpanat, due to their wrong conceptions, how am I affected? If they think I am engaged in these activities, how does it affect me? The enlightened person says. This is the external view. If the enlightened person sees, I'm sorry, if the observer watches the enlightened person not only getting alms, but eating. And the observer makes an assumption. What is the assumption? The enlightened person desires food. Now, note, the observer makes that assumption based on observing the actions of a body. That's not a very good basis for the assumption, is it? That's all, but that's all you can see. All you see is the behavior of a body. Can you peer inside the jnani's mind, the enlightened person's mind? You have no idea what's going on in the mind. Suppose you watch a body eating, and inside, what is a perspective? The enlightened person's perspective is what? The enlightened person's perspective is this. This body is eating. Not I am eating. Why? I am unchanging consciousness. I don't eat. On the other hand, this body is eating. Why is this body eating? It's hungry. I'm not hungry. I am unchanging consciousness. Unchanging consciousness doesn't get hungry. This body, however, gets hungry. When this body gets hungry, what does it do? It goes and collects some alms. And then what does it do? It eats. So this is the perspective. From the enlightened person's perspective, there's no action whatsoever, no desires whatsoever. When you look from the outside, you can draw any conclusion you want. And the enlightened person says, if you make a wrong conclusion about me, how does that affect me? It doesn't affect me at all. All right. Yeah. Now, if the enlightened person is krita krityam, krityam, to-do list. One of the things on that to-do list, let me go back to that. Oh, that was a prior verse. No need. One of the items on that to-do list, remember this person was a sadhaka, a spiritual seeker, before they became enlightened. When they were a sadhaka, what were some of the items on the to-do list? Well, if they're a sadhaka, their items that are absent from the to-do list is going to the mall, going to Atlantic City, and going to the liquor store. Those items are not on the sadhaka's to-do list. What items are on a sadhaka's to-do list? Study Vedanta. And more specifically, three items on a sadhaka means spiritual aspirant. Three items on every sadhaka's to-do list include shravana, manana, and nididhyasana. We've heard these terms before. Shravana is Vedantic inquiry guided by the scriptures. Manana is a process of removing doubts, logical inquiry for the sake of removing doubts, logical analysis. And nididhyasana, contemplation. Contemplation for the sake of removing habitual wrong thinking. We've discussed these before. We'll talk about it a little bit further here. Excuse me. So for every sadhaka, these three items are on the list. But then, the enlightened person is no longer a sadhaka. When the tenth man discovers, I am the one I've been looking for, they're no longer a seeker. They're no longer seeking the missing person. When you discover that you are content, that you are Satchitananda Atma, full and complete, when you discover that you are no longer a seeker, no longer a seeker after contentment. Your to-do list is filled. If your to-do list is completely checked off, what about shravana, manana, nididhyasana? They're checked off. Absolutely checked off. That's what he says here. Shrinvantvajnata-tattvaste. Shrinvantya jnata tattvaste janan kasma chrinom yaham janan kasma chrinom manyat manyantam samshayapanna manyantam samshayapanna namanyeham samshayah namanyeham samshayah. So before we see the words, if the enlightened person has checked off shravana, manana, nididhyasana, they're done. Done. Done means no more shravana, no more manana, no more nididhyasana. That's what he says here. He says, shrinvantu ajnata tattvaha te. Te, those who are ajnata tattva, those who have yet to discover their true nature. Ajnata tattva is one's true nature. Ajnata, unknown. Those who have yet to discover their true nature, shrinvantu, let them listen. Let them do shravana. Let them continue coming to Vedanta classes. Let all the ignorant ones continue to attend Vedanta classes. On the other hand, aham, at the end of the first line, second line, aham janan, I, knowing my true nature, kasmat sharanomi, for what reason should I continue listening? Why should I continue listening to the teachings of Vedanta when the teachings of Vedanta have led me to discover what I wanted to discover? So why should I continue? If you want to continue, continue. If you want to go to classes, continue. Whatever you want to do, if you want to read books, if whatever you want to do, you please continue. He says, why should I continue? Janan, having discovered Atma Tattvam, having discovered my true nature, which is full and complete, why should I continue to do shravana? Similarly, manyantam samshayapannaha. Samshaya means doubt. Samshayapannaha. Those sadhakas who are full of doubts, samshayapannaha, those sadhakas who still have lots of doubts, what about them? Manyantam. Let them do manana. Let them continue. Let them do as much logical analysis and inquiry as they want. Let them continue to do manana. Na manyeham. I'm not going to do any manana. Na manyeham. I'm not going to do any manana. Why? Asamshayaha. I have no doubts. So the enlightened person says, I've already discovered what I need to discover. Why do I need to listen to more Vedanta? Tell me, once the tenth man has been told you are the one you're looking for, and once he really gets it, does he need to be told again and again? Once he really gets it, he doesn't need to hear it again and again. So in the same way, once you really get it, you don't need to come here on Tuesday nights. You don't need to. Once you really get it, we will notice your absence. And we will smile nicely. Oh, what a wonderful thing. You know, whenever we have a class like this, there's always some attrition. Now, the attrition could be understood in two ways. Either they got bored and dissatisfied, but I prefer to think the attrition is because they're all enlightened. They don't need to come anymore. Good. Let there be more attrition. So just as if the enlightened person has discovered shravana is not required, shravana is for the sake of that discovery. Manana is for the sake of removing doubts. If there are no more doubts, why do you need to do more manana? You know, one thing we forget is that Vedanta is a means to an end. It's not the end. You know, the metaphor that's used so many times is somebody crosses the river in a boat. You use the boat to cross the river. In the same way, in fact, you find this in poetry. They call it Vedanta Nauka, the boat of Vedanta. Through the boat of Vedanta, you cross the samsara sagara, the ocean of worldly life. you cross this terrible ocean, they'll use all these adjectives, you cross this terrible, frightening ocean of worldly life and suffering, you cross it in the boat of Vedanta, and the boat of Vedanta that has, the guru is steering the boat, and you're the passenger in the boat, and you're going across. And when you get to the other side of the river, you pick the boat up on your shoulders and carry it. Not only the boat, the guru also. The boat and the guru, who is piloting the boat, you put them both on your shoulders and continue on your way. What for? The boat and the guru have served their purpose. The boat represents the teachings of Vedanta. The guru is the guru. When the teachings of Vedanta and the guru have served their purpose, you don't need to carry them on your shoulders. Okay, enough said. I think I made reference, I think in this class, at the end of that, what was that movie, that book? Razor's Edge, that Somerset Maugham book. You know, the newly enlightened person is up on the top of a mountain getting really cold, and they're enlightened and they're really cold, and they went up on that mountain with all of the scriptures which serve the purpose to make this person enlightened. So what do? They're really cold. They start burning the scriptures. Good. You get some further utility out of it, because the other purpose is served. Okay, so for the enlightened person, no need to do shravana, no need to do manana. What about nididhyasana? Viparyasto nididhyaset, viparyasto nididhyaset, kim dhyanam aviparyayat, kim dhyanam aviparyayat, dehatma tvaviparyasam. Dehatmatvaviparyas nakadachit bhajamyaham nakadachit. So, with regard to nididhyasana, let's be clear about its purpose. Its purpose is to remove, the term used here is viparyasam. Viparyasa is a fancy word for a mistake. Viparyasa means a mistake. Look at the third line. Dehatmatva viparyasam, the mistake of taking your body to be yourself. Dehatma. Dehatmatva, the condition of taking your body as yourself. Body here would mean not only stula sharira, but sukshma sharira as well. Taking your physical and subtle body to be your true self. That is clearly viparyasam. That's a mistake. And it can be a habitual mistake. We've discussed, I think, in some other context, nididhyasana. We've said that even when knowledge has gone in, habitual mistakes can remain. Even when, the example you've heard me give is, even when you know that the earth turns on its axis, you continue to see the sun going down. You continue to think the sun goes down. Even though you have knowledge, there is such a thing as a habitual mistake. Habitual mistake here is called viparyasam. In particular, dehatmatva viparyasam, the mistake of habitually taking yourself to be your body and mind. So this enlightened person says, dehatmatva viparyasam nakadachit bhajami aham. Aham, I, nakadapi, I never bhajami, experience. I never experience what? Dehatmatva viparyasam. I never make the mistake of taking myself as my body. He says, I have stopped making that mistake. How did he stop making that mistake, he or she? How did the enlightened person get rid of the mistake? Let's back up. How did the enlightened person discover his or her true nature as Satchidananda? Through shravana. When Shravana led to that aparoksha jnanam, that immediate knowledge, then Shravana served its purpose, and therefore Shravana is no longer needed. How did the enlightened person become free from doubts? Samshaya, we saw also in the last verse. The enlightened person did lots of manana. Doubts don't go away on their own. In fact, doubts have a tendency to multiply if they're left alone. You have to address the doubts. How do you address the doubts? In Vedanta, we call that process of removing doubts, we call that process manana, a process of inquiry whose purpose is to remove doubts and vagueness. That process is called manana. So the enlightened person started off with doubts and vagueness. What did the enlightened person do? Lots of manana. What is the result of doing all the manana? No more doubts, no more vagueness. Having removed all the doubts and vagueness, manana has served its purpose. It's no longer needed. Now, the enlightened person earlier had plenty of viparyasa, guaranteed. Why? Everyone has it. Everyone, the term we've used before is viparita bhavana, a bhavana, a feeling which is viparita, opposed to what you already know. It's like you know the earth is turning on its axis, but you still think the sun is going down. That is viparita bhavana. Here, instead of using viparita bhavana, the term he uses is viparyasam, same meaning, a mistake. A habitual mistake. In this case, the habitual mistake is dehatmatva viparyasam, the mistake of habitually taking the body and mind to be oneself. The enlightened person had that mistake in full measure. What did the enlightened person do? Lots of nididhyasana. And having done lots of nididhyasana, guess what? Dehatma viparyasam goes away. So he says, aham nakadachit bhajami dehatma viparyasam. I no longer have any viparyasam, any mistakes. Therefore, he says, going now to the top of the verse, viparyastaha nididhyaset. Viparyastaha is one who has viparyasa, one who is making that mistake. Those who continue to make the mistake of thinking the body and mind is myself. He says, nididhyaset, let them do nididhyasana. Those who continue to have habitual mistakes about their true nature, nididhyaset, let them continue to do nididhyasana. Kim dhyanam, why, what is, kim dhyanam, what is the purpose for me? What is the purpose for me to do any further? Dhyanam here means nididhyasanam. What is the purpose for me to do any further dhyana or nididhyasana? Viparyayat. For one who doesn't have any more viparyaya, another word that means error, mistake. Viparyaya, viparyasa, these are synonyms. Viparyaya means mistake. Viparyasa means mistake. Aviparyayat, because I no longer have any mistakes, kim dhyanam, why should I perform any nididhyasana? All right. We're just very briefly, we won't go further in the text. I just want to make one more observation here. Remember what we started off saying. All of this was abhasasya. All of this was for chidabhasa, which means with that in mind, we can give a second interpretation to these last two verses. And here's a second, completely different interpretation. Both are correct. It's possible to have multiple correct interpretations of verses. So here is another interpretation, a completely different interpretation, but a completely correct interpretation. What is that interpretation? The enlightened person knows I am unchanging consciousness. Does unchanging consciousness need shravana? Does unchanging consciousness need manana? Does unchanging consciousness need nididhyasana? Absolutely not. So this is a completely different way. So when he said before, those who need to listen to the teachings of Vedanta, let them listen. Why should I listen? I am unchanging consciousness. Unchanging consciousness doesn't need to listen to the teachings of Vedanta. He says, those who are engaged and those who have doubts, let them do manana. He says, why should I do manana? I am unchanging consciousness. What good is manana going to do for unchanging consciousness? It's useless. And finally, he says, those who have these habitual errors, let them do nididhyasana. On the other hand, he says, he or she says, I am unchanging consciousness. What good will nididhyasana do for unchanging consciousness? Nothing at all. So it's the second way of interpreting these verses. Both interpretations are correct. Okay, good place to wrap up for tonight. Om sarve bhavantu sukhinah, sarve santu niramayah, sarve bhadrani pashyantu, ma kashchid dukha bhag bhavet, asato ma satgamaya, tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, mrityor ma amritangamaya. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Om Tat Sat. Good. See you next time.